and he deals with us because we're female. Therefore, we're the ones running around doing this and that. So, therefore, is what Krishna provides, we have to be satisfied with. And we have to be chaste to Krishna. Then it works. You know? Then it works. So that same principle then comes down as the living entity has the male. Just like mother, that's the masculine principle. The child's the feminine principle. You know? Because the mother's controlling everything and doing all that. And she's, you know, has to control her senses, right? She doesn't eat. She makes sure the kid eats. You know, she has to be sensitive to the kid's needs. So the masculine principle has to be applied. So there's always... You only have these two principles, and it moves back and forth. You know, the husband's sick, the wife is therefore calling the shots and what it should do. She's taking the male role, he's the female. So she's sensitive to his needs, and she's controls her senses. She'd like to be out with her friends, but no, she stays home and takes care. So, like that, it works. The whole thing is, every interaction is always based on the male-female principle. Like that. Because there isn't anything else. There's only Radha and Krishna. There's nothing else. Radha and Krishna expanded of everything, so that's all there is. Understanding this, then you can understand. That doesn't mean that, oh, I'm female because I'm sent. No. It just means it's just the way it is. It's just how you operate it. You know, you have a bowl and a spoon. One has to be male, one has to be female. The bowl is giving the existence, the support, the meaning to the whole thing. Gives the sphere and everything, and the spoon does all the activity and like that. So, you know, there you get that. But at the same time, as the table is the masculine and the bowl is the feminine. Right? You know, so then each thing and whatever is it, everything has that. That's why sometimes there's confusion, because you want it just a clean box and that's it. But it's like, let's say you're walking down the street. The end of one block is the beginning of the next block. You know what I'm saying? So one aspect has its goes and overlaps, so it's in both. You know? So that's the thing. And then when you look at that, then again it does the same thing again. It splits again. You know, you take the female person, you can split that into male-female. You take one of them, you split that again, you take a split. So that's the thing, it's a science. If the science is understood, it works. But somehow or another, we're reticent to follow that. We're too proud, we've got our own idea, we know better, that something is there. And so we just can't accept that Krishna's system works great. But what in Krishna's system is working great is the principles by it. The form of it, in Kali Yuga, you can't get it to work fully anyway. Right? The interesting thing, it just came up as a side, just out of interest, came up in some of our Bhagavatam research work, is that the Bhagavatam means there's the original Bhagavatam. I think it's called the Satvata Shruti. Like that. It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam itself. And it's actually, what we know in the Bhagavatam is the prayers of the personified Vedas. That's the original Bhagavatam. It's that discussion. So in the Bhagavatam itself, part of that discussion is there. But that discussion is big. So that is the book in the Satya Yuga. And everybody's Paramahamsa, and that's their book. So the Bhagavatam is actually the book of the age. But then when you come into Treta Yuga, then the material desire comes up in that, so that has to be accommodated through the full manifestation of the Varnashram system. Right? So the full Varnashram is a manifestation of those who are conditioned and have material desire, but have good qualities. So in the Satya and the Treta, it can work. I mean, in the Treta and the Dwapara, it works. Satya Yuga is 100% good qualities, so they don't need the Varnashram system. You know, they have a basic culture, but they don't need all the different things. Then in Treta, one quarter is gone. So now it's three quarters good, one quarter bad, then the Varnashram system works. Dwapara Yuga is 50-50, so it still works. But in Kali Yuga is three quarters, one quarter, it doesn't work. Right? As a form. So actually the form of it's only fully manifested in Treta and Dwapara Yugas. And because the people are so uncultured, they can't actually understand and grasp and practice the Vedic literatures as such. So the only thing they can actually work with, that they can do, is the Satvata Shruti, is the Bhagavatam. Because it's just essence. So therefore, when we're dealing with it, we take the essence. From that, how much we is practical, useful, desirable, we expand it. But you always must have essence. You don't have essence, it's no use. You know, if you have flour but it has no smell, what's the use? So you have sugar, it's not sweet, what's the use? You know, you have water, it's not wet, so what's the use? So fire, it's not hot, what's the use? So the essence, so the form of the flickering fire, that's nice, but the real thing is the heat and light that comes from it. Right? Otherwise, what's the use of it? So that's the point, is the Varnashram system, it has its essence. Its essence is actually the Bhagavatam. Right? Because that's the point that Narada Muni is making to Vyasa. You didn't give the essence. You gave the whole, you gave the form of it, so you gave him basically everybody a dead body, but you didn't give him the soul. So you have to give him the soul. So that's the thing. So in our approach to Varnashram, therefore, we take the essence and then from there apply it suitably. Right? Because actually what we're following is just the essence. Sometimes it's like, oh, so much rules, regulation. It's nothing. No one knows what they're talking about. Grihastha has five slaughterhouses in his house that he's going to hell for. And unless he does yajna to counteract that, he is going to hell. Doesn't matter. So a devotee is doing the highest sacrifice of the Sankirtan yajna. Therefore, he doesn't have to do the Vedic rituals for it. Right? But if he's not doing the Sankirtan yajna, he's obliged. You know, and it's very elaborate. Twice a day, they have to do this homas, and they have to go around with the rice. And there's about, I don't know, 16, 32 places in the whole house where they have to put that rice twice a day. You know? And that's one thing. That's called Balidan. You know, then the guest, they have to take care of a guest every day. They have to, like you see, Prabhupada's father would invite four, you know, sannyasis, renunciates, sadhus, you know, like a day. He has to have one every day. He has to do the shraddhas to the forefathers every day. He has to do tarpan with water every day. Once a month he has to do a small shraddha. Once a year he has to do the full one. And the rules for it are pages and pages and pages. You can't pick up a pot of prasad with one hand. It has to be two. You can't shake it. You know, devotees will pick it up, look at it, shake it. All those things. You do that, it's sent to the rakshasas. They can get to eat it. It's their food then. As soon as you pick it up with one hand and you shake it, it's theirs. You know, so stuff like that. You can't talk. People are eating, can't go, wow, this is great. Because they're eating for someone else, so they can't themselves. So as soon as the food's not hot, you can't, the shred is over. You know? It's just, there's so many like that. It's just, it's like that. The guy goes home, you know, the Brahmin goes home and has a relationship with, you know, one of his maidservants. Your whole shred is out the window. You and him go to hell. And you don't even control that. You know, that's what he does in the private of his home. The Brahmin that you invite, if he's not one who's studying and teaching Shastra, if he's doing anything else, even if he's a doctor, an Ayurvedic doctor, or those, he's not allowed. It's not allowed. It's like really strict. And that's what you have to do. No ifs, no ands, no buts. So Prabhupada just gave us a few things. And we're saying, oh, fanatic and this and that. You know, it's like we don't know what we're talking about. So actually what we're dealing with is the essence. We're actually dealing with the Paramahamsa culture, basically, of Satyayuga. And we have the book. So Prabhupada's technically given us Satyayuga. The golden age is actually the Satyayuga. That's what we have. But, what is it? What is it? Second verse, Shikshastakam. But I'm so unfortunate that even then I can't, you know, accept it, do anything about it. So that's us, you know, Hari Bhava. You know, we can always stand on the, what do you call it? You know, it's like the platform you feel good about knowing that Lord Chaitanya saves the most fallen first, so we know we're the dregs, you know, we're the scum, you know, like that. Because he saves them first. As it goes along, then he'll start catching all these high-grade Brahmins and their aristocracy. They'll come later. You know, but we're the ones that are most fallen, you know, so he's caught us first, right? We're in the beginning of the 10,000 years. You know, so we can always, in looking at, you know, previously what we said about appreciating others, so we can know that, you know, we're just as bad as everybody else, you know, like that. But it's progressive, so we move forward. Is that okay? How do we reconcile that we should not live by reciting the scriptures, hear from them or live by that? So how do we deal with that in the society? You have educational institutions that teach the scriptures and charge money. According to the Vedic principle, education is free. And that's the standard. Now, but also in the Vedic time, we went to the person, we went looking for them. But nowadays, many times we have to go out looking for students, right? And it's just the nature of it. You know, so as a preaching mission, we have to go looking for our students. They don't come to us. In the other ages, you know, Maitreya Muni is sitting there and people go look for him, or they go look for Bharadvaj or Raivya or Gotama. You know what I'm saying? They hear about spiritual life. Oh, how do I get it? Oh, you get it from the sages. Where are these sages? You know, oh, they live in the forest. Oh, where, you know, and then you go. So they subsect, but the nature of the Kali Yuga is no one's interested, so you have to go out. So because of that, then in education, then that creates unnatural expenses. Right? Because before it was, you went, you talked to the sadhu under a tree. And now, I mean, some people don't go and aren't interested in sitting under a tree, you know, and having classes. You know, it's like a person came, what's that? Yeah, you know, no fan, mosquitoes are there, it just doesn't work. Prabhupada mentioned he made all these buildings for the Western devotees. They won't come and sit down next to the bank of the Ganga. You know, he said, if Bhaktivedanta Swami sat down on the bank of the Ganga, nobody'd be here, including the reporter that's criticizing why you have the buildings. You're only here to make this comment because I have these buildings. So nobody's interested. Does this make some sense? We're not here in what we're presenting now. We're creating the field or the situation in which it's come up. You know what I'm saying? Still, it has to be individually applied. Therefore, then, since, so people would come, then they would also, because they're working under the teacher, they'd be studying from the teacher, they'd be rendering service to the teacher. So they'd be going out and doing begging or stuff like this. So their facilities would be taken care of. You know what I'm saying? The student is there because they beg, they bring it back, then all the brahmacharis is put together, and then you can feed everybody. Like this. So nowadays, service is not rendered. People aren't necessarily going to the person, or they're not fully going. So then that means then things have to be done. Things aren't going to go all over the world for that. Some president won't even let you out of the temple, let alone to go somewhere else. Rare, okay. You do great on the marathon, we'll let you go for the Bhakti Shastri course, or, you know, stuff like that. It's not like, no, everyone in the temple should have Bhakti Shastri, and either they present, or we get someone to come, or we send somebody, train them up, bring them back, and train. No, it's used as a carrot, you know, like that. So then, the tendency is therefore, you have to, the educators got to get whoever they want to get for teaching all together in one place. So to create all that facility is very expensive. And the only method that up to now they've figured out is to put that expense over to the students. So in one sense, depending upon how it's run, at this point is where I'll stop the explanation, is some of the expense then, because it's created, it's for the student themselves, so they're actually only paying for their own facility. So they're not actually paying for the education. The education is still free. But when they start collecting beyond that, then that's another thing. Then that's individual and why they're doing it. So then you have to decide, are the teachers doing that, or is the person organizing it doing it? You know what I'm saying? So we may avoid the person organizing it, but associate with the teachers, because the teachers are there to teach. You know what I'm saying? So in any case, still the education has relevance. Does that make sense? So because your point was not associate, but probably if you check that in, you know, that is the mentality of the teachers themselves. You know? Huh? Yeah, no, it's true. People aren't generous. They don't like to give. Like I was discussing with one devotee the other day, is that, you know, they'll do stuff like astronomy or astrology or pujas or this. You spend many, many hours, you spend years learning the thing, you spend the thing, and then they think, oh, you're devotees, you should do it for free. Somehow or another, everything else you buy, you know. You appreciate, you do, you put out for, you know, so. But somehow or another, it's Brahminical culture is not appreciated, you know. It's said that if there's too much attachment to sense gratification, then there can't be appreciation for Brahminical culture. So there's still a weakness that's there. Matter of values, yes. It's a matter of values. Because if you value Brahminical culture, then it should be that there is some way or another that facilities are created. You know, it's just like, let's take an example of the culture slowly becoming established. Prabhupada wanted the Mayapur festival here. Beginning, there was no facility. But you just had to get some prasad and this and that. Everyone slept on the verandas and the field, anything. So it was a very small amount. But the temple didn't have, so the devotees from where they come would give a little something, it would take care of everything. Devotees needed better facility. They didn't like sleeping on the veranda with 200 other people. So then they started building rooms and fixing them up. There's no fans, there's no screens, there's no this. So then they would charge, and every year, 1 year they put in screens in all the rooms, 1 year they put in fans, 1 year they do this, 1 year they do that. So then, but because of that, expenses were high. Devotees complained, they don't want to pay. So then, you know, time they stop. Then because the local devotees want to keep it going, they start asking. But by this time you have enough devotees who are situated in yatras that have money, then you can appeal, okay, we want to feed the devotees during Gaur Purnima. And it's this much per day for this many devotees. And then you have devotees coming forward and sponsoring. So only now, then you can have a festival that's basically similar like the original Gaur Purnima, which was sponsored. All the devotees that came for the first Akhetri Utsav of Narottam Das Thakur, they didn't pay anything. It was all sponsored by all the wealthy local people. Like that. But you're only starting to get that just in the last, I think, 3 years or 4 years they started doing that. But before that, it always had to pay, otherwise it wasn't. But only now devotees are appreciating and being generous and giving money, and then so then you can run those things for free. So it goes both ways. If Brahminical culture is appreciated, then one doesn't have to do that. But even if it's not appreciated, still you can be very careful. You know what I'm saying? So that you're only dealing with actual expenses. You know, like that. Does that make sense? But at the same time, is because you do have to bring teachers from all over the world, you do have to have an administrator. You know? And so, if he's an administrator, he can't necessarily be raising money elsewhere. So it might include that. So one might not avoid them because they're not making money off of the Bhagavatam. They're trying to create an educational facility. And to do that, it's a full-time job. So they're, does that make sense? So one could adjust it like that. And then with time, when it's appreciated, you'll see there'll be less and less of that kind of difficulty, and more people will be supporting it. It'll be much easier. Does that make sense? That okay? Or? Yeah? Okay, so it's late now, so I think we'll end here. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivinda ki, Jai Nitai Gomura Premanandi. Thank you.